very good afternoon to you. You are tuned into Eagle FM and this is On The Radar. I'm your host Nafa, happy as usual bringing you not just the news, but the narrative behind the headlines. Now here on The Radar, we go beyond the bulletin points. We slow it down, zoom in and examine the heartbeat of the nation. From the chambers of parliament to the dusty roads of our forgotten regions, we give stories the space they need and the analysis they deserve. Now, this show isn't just about what's happening. It's about why it's happening, who's making the calls, and how it affects you and I. Our conversations are deep dives, backed by archived reports, real voices, and the context that doesn't expire with a news cycle. Now, whether you're driving through Katutura, sitting in Swakopmund, or listening from the diaspora, On The Radar is where critical conversations unfold. Stream us live via our Eagle FM website. Follow us on our digital platforms such as Eagle FM Namibia on Facebook, LinkedIn or Instagram. And plug into our WhatsApp channel for behind-the-scenes content and exclusive updates. And don't forget, our Eagle FM app available on App Store or Play Store. Now this is On The Radar. Thoughtful radio for thinking people. Let's get right into it. The Namibian judiciary, together with its counterpart from Uganda, held a workshop focused on developing Namibia's electronic case management system, also known as ECMIS. Now, this saw the involvement of much of the functionalities of the judiciary and the justice sector engage on what the Ugandan system can mean for Namibia. The Electronic Case Management Information System is a digital system that helps courts and justice-related institutions such as police, prosecutors, correctional services, and others to store, manage, and share case information electronically. Also to track cases from the beginning to the end and communicate across different departments in the justice system. Uganda already has experience with this type of system, so Namibia invited Ugandan justice officials to share lessons and insights from their experience. Now, this helps Namibia to avoid mistakes and improve efficiency in building its own system. Chief Justice Peter Chivute, speaking at the workshop, explained that right now Namibia's justice system works in silos, which means each department, whether police, courts, correctional services, etc., keeps its own information separately, and they don't always communicate well, and this slows down the justice delivery. He further said with the electronic case management information system, all those parts of the justice system could become interoperable, which means they can now share information smoothly, work together faster, and make the whole justice chain, more efficient. It could also reduce delays in court cases and help track repeat offenders, reduce lost files or human error, as well as improve transparency and access to justice for ordinary Namibians. Let's now take a listen to Chief Justice Chivute on what he himself had to say. Let's take a listen.
We enhance judicial efficiency. We aim to reflect on the practical lessons, opportunities and challenges associated with proceeding from fragmented tools to a comprehensive, integrated justice system. This event also marks the beginning of a formal implementation journey. I wish to inform you that a task force has been constituted, which I have the privilege of heading, the National Digital Justice Task Force, NDJTF, includes representatives from key justice institutions. Is mandated to define the strategic vision for Namibia's Integrated Electronic Case Management and Information System, ISMIS, setting objectives and timelines and overseeing its phased implementation. While the judiciary will retain the leadership of your project to safeguard judicial independence and court user relevance, the task force will serve as a central governance structure that ensures coordinated input and buy-in from justice sector stakeholders. It is also envisioned that the committee will spearhead the resource mobilization safe order alignment and long-term policy coherence in support of Namibia's digital justice agenda. We must bear in mind that digitization is not just a technical project. It's a change management process that calls for collective effort, shared ownership, and a clear national vision. We cannot afford to work in silos. The success of this initiative depends on closer cooperation between the judiciary and other key stakeholders, including the Ministry of Justice, the Office of the Prosecutor General, the Police, the Namibian Correctional Service, the Directorate of Legal Aid, and of course, the legal profession. It is also imperative that the judiciary secures the support of the executive and integrates the e-justice project into the country's broader development goals, including Vision 2030 and the National Development Plan. As we embark on this journey, let us be guided by the example set before us. Let us example underscores the power of high-level coordination and illustrates the value of judicial-led implementation, sustained through strategic planning and inclusive design. Namibia must adopt a model that builds on these lessons while responding to our unique context. Let me conclude by once again welcoming all participants to this important conference.
Now, during the workshop as well, on the development of Namibia's electronic case management information system, Uganda's Deputy Chief Justice Flavian Zaiser shared valuable insights from Uganda's own journey towards digital transformation in the justice sector. Justice Zaiser explained that Uganda had faced similar challenges to those currently experienced in Namibia, particularly the fragmentation of the justice chain. In Uganda, various justice institutions operated in isolation, he said, which maintained its own records and systems. Now, this lack of coordination created major bottlenecks in the administration of justice. He noted that before the rollout of Uganda's two electronic court and case management system, the country experienced frequent delays in court proceedings, difficulty tracking cases, missing files, and general insufficiency across the justice system. The dispensation of justice was significantly affected, with the public often losing confidence in the system due to its slow response and lack of integration. Justice Zaiser emphasized that the introduction of digital system transformed Uganda's justice delivery, allowing courts and supporting institutions to coordinate more effectively, access real-time case data, and streamline operations. He encouraged Namibian stakeholders to draw from Uganda's experience, stressing the importance of stakeholder buy-in, training, and a phased implementation for the system to succeed. Let's now take a listen to Deputy Justice of Uganda, Flavian Zaiser.
And thus, in our judicial system, started in the early 2000s. And in the early 2000s, the judiciary of Uganda faced many challenges and case backlog. Inefficient paper-based systems and limited access to justice. To address these issues, the government of Uganda, with the support from the Danish International Development Agency, initiated the Justice Law and Order Sector reforms, one of whose major components included judiciary modernization through ICT. And the launch of the Namibia Judiciary Support Project Phase 1 and Phase 2 was the tagline. Phase 1 was from 2001 to 2006. The first phase of the tender support focused on strengthening the institutional framework of the judiciary through capacity building, training, and baseline assessment of ICT readiness. Because I think the idea was that you cannot have ICT unless you have trained, you have built capacity. what they are going into. Then the second phase, which was in 2011, came the modernizing court processes, reducing delays and enhancing access to justice. This phase saw the actual introduction of computing systems in the judiciary, like the court case administration system. Of course, the computer age actually in Uganda, if you look at the first computers that were introduced in the country, they were very huge and they have reducing in size. That's how far we have come. And so all this, I think, mainly it was the media that was behind it. So now, the first system we had for case management was the caste system, which was introduced, but we had a consultant, K2 Informatics, which was contracted to develop a CAS for the Uganda Judiciary around 2005-2006 under the support of the Uganda Phase 2 Judiciary Reform Project. CAS was purposely developed as a custom-built case tracking system, streamlined registration, tracking management of court cases, and best statistical reporting. It aimed to reduce manual workload, enhance accountability, and promote timely disposal of cases. CAS was piloted at the High Courts, Kampala, and selected Chief Magistrate Courts, and gradually rolled out to more than 60 courts by 2016. But I will tell you that the CAS, the revival of CAS, because we remained manual. Although we had the same variance of the system, but the rest of the processes remained manual. Yes, they would enter, for example, at the registration, they would enter the case number, but they would have the physical file again with the papers and everything. So it remained manual up to date. So you can call it a dual system. You have information in the computer, but it's already the information about the case, not the case, the paper case itself. In other words, the record of the case. Yeah. So some cast limitations and challenges were the following. Number one, limited functionality, like lack of integration with other institutions, e.g. DPP, so you could not integrate it. Manually, the dependencies, despite utilization, some processes remain manual. Three, inadequate infrastructure, poor connectivity, and power outages hindered its use. Sustainability concerns, reliance on donor funding limited the system upgrades. Three, we had a transition. The experience from CAS informed the development of the ICMIS, which is now the flagship system replacing CAS, which are in full end-to-end electronic case management, e-payment, and integration with stakeholders. So, now the experience we had with CAS is that maybe when it was introduced, we were never prepared to change. The system remained the manual, as I mentioned, and I remember one time when I had just come in as principal judge, I tried to see some of the pending cases, and I discovered that I had cases pending four judges who left and those who died. So meaning that we had a system, but it was not being updated. When a case is concluded, it remains the you know, it remains pending. Yeah, so that is the challenge we had with that system. It remained manual. But perhaps the learning point that maybe when you introduce this one, a drastic decision has been made to ensure that you remove manual processes. ICMIS definition and history. Of course, ICMIS in full is the electronic court case management information system. It's a fully featured system that automates and tracks all aspects of a case life cycle from initial filing through disposition and appeal. It facilitates collection, storage, and distribution of all case related data. In other words, the entire case from inception, from the time of filing up to disposal, all that information should be in the system. So if I click on the case, I should be able to find all that information in the system. Even at appeal, we are hoping that in the near future, on appeal, a lawyer should be able only to file a memorandum of appeal, and the rest of the information is picked from the system, if the system can populate it to and give it the, you know, the way lawyers populate the documents by giving them a key, for example. The system should be able to do that. The lawyer should be able to file a memorandum of appeal only. So that's what we are looking at. KIDIMIS is one of the key ICT systems that has been implemented in support of the digitization transformation program. That is the CAP 14 of National Development Plan S3. It's also in support of the judiciary's vision of justice for all. The commissioning was on the 21st of October 2021, and official go live date was on 1st March. That is 3 years and 4 months old.
Namibia's current e-justice system is limited but a crucial step. Namibia's journey towards digitalizing the justice system began with the launch of the e-justice system, which is currently at the High Court of Namibia. Now, this digital platform was officially implemented in 2019, marking an important shift from manual processes to electronic case handling. But unfortunately, its scope remains limited only to the High Court of Namibia for now. Now, what does this e-justice system do, you may be wondering? Well, the e-justice system is a web-based platform that allows legal practitioners and court officials to electronically file cases and documents, schedule hearings, receive court orders and judgments online, as well as track the progress of civil cases in real time. And civil servants themselves, they can also be able to track track electronically their cases and know when they are scheduled for their hearing, know what has been said there, and from the comfort of their home, that is. Now, the aim of it is to help civil litigation, and it's used mostly by legal practitioners, the judges themselves, and the High Court personnel. Now, while the e-justice system has improved efficiently at the High Court level, it has not yet been rolled out to the magistrate courts and to the criminal courts, as well as other justice institutions such as the police, the correctional services, or the prosecutors. Now, this creates a fragmented system where digital processes at the High Court still depend on manual, paper-based procedures elsewhere in the justice chain, which further means that there will be delays in transmitting information. Some will get lost or duplicated files, and it also reduces coordination across institutions. Hence why Namibia is currently pushing for the current ECMIS. Now, Namibia's current e-justice system is not fully integrated across the entire justice system, which is why the judiciary is now working to develop the electronic case management information system and roll it out to other places. Unlike the current e-justice platform, the ECIMS, which I told you stands for the Electronic Case Management Information System, connects all parts of the justice system, should it now fully be implemented and rolled out to all other sectors. So it would connect all parts of the justice sector, from the police to prisons, and it will handle both criminal and civil cases. It will standardize and centralize data sharing and access. Imagine a lawyer who is probably in Windhoek dealing with a case, or perhaps wanting to find out about a case of somebody who is in the north, for instance. And they can just go to the system, log in. Of course, there would be a number that would then be able to track. And then if they have this number and they got the information, they'll be able to track down of how far is this particular case? Let's say perhaps he has just been assigned with this case. He's taking over from another person, maybe from another lawyer, and he is currently in Windhoek. All he has to do is go onto the system, log into the system, and be able to check and do everything else from the comfort of his home or from Windhoek itself without him having to travel to the north and without him having to call up further lawyers from there or having to, you know, all this paperwork physically, but then just have to log into the system and be able to track. And whatever progress that he also has, does, or recommendations that he does, all he has to do is write it down there. The next person also that wants the same information on the particular civil case, maybe, they too can just come in and see what was updated, when was it updated, what does it see. So that's exactly what it's all about. Now, let's do a comparison between the current e-justice system and the electronic case management information system. Now, when we're talking about the scope, well, in regards to the e-justice system, which is currently in place now in Namibia, only the High Court has it, in regards to civil matters. While in regards to the electronic case management information system, which I will be referring to with its abbreviation ECMIS, the entire justice system at all levels will actually have it. Now, who are the users who will be using it? Currently, for the e-justice system, only legal practitioners and judges are able to use the e-justice system. While in regards to the ECMIS, which is now what Uganda uses, the courts, the police, the prosecutors, and others will be able to use it. In regards to functionality, for the e-justice system, it's filing and case tracking. While under the ECMIS, it's a full case management and information sharing. In regards to integration, in regards to the e-justice, it is limited. But under the electronic case management information system, also ECMIS, it is fully interoperable. So Namibia's existing e-justice system is a strong foundation, yes, but expanding it through the electronic case management information system, also known as ECMIS, will be essential for creating a truly modern, efficient, and citizen-friendly justice system. So even for you, having to, just the other day when we traveled to the north, I traveled with somebody who works in Rosh Pinna and had to attend a court case in Otavi. And the officer kept on calling him, so it was just via calls. He also doesn't know exactly. Of course, it was over in regards to a ticket, and it was overdue. He needed to pay this, and it's on that particular day that he now needs to go for the date, because I trust that the warrant of arrest had been issued against him, hence why the police kept on calling him. But if he was sitting at home in Rosh Pinna, didn't have to, he could have been tracking it and seeing how far, when, how, without having the officer being the one to call him, because he was also quite concerned to say, wait, is that the officer perhaps is trying to seek a bribe, or is it just how things are done and that kind of stuff? But imagine where you don't have to be dealing with that. You alone have to sit at home and track down your civil case. How far? When is my court date? What has been said? What progress? Has it failed? What did the lawyer say? What did the judge say? When are we supposed to meet? What documents am I supposed to bring along? Stuff like that. It makes it so much easier. Now, that's currently how it is with the justice system in regards to documents that are uploaded there and stuff like that. But it's unlimited as well. And it's not rolled out to the lower courts. It's only limited to the High Court of Namibia. But with the electronic case management information system, it now gets to be rolled out to all other court levels, and other personnel can be able to access it, which means that Namibia will be moving towards making progress in terms of e-justice system. I mean, in terms of, because I trust that the e-justice will completely fade away, and they will just make use of the electronic case management information system. Now, these are the things that we're actually talking about when we talk about collaboration, and the fact that Namibia invited Ugandan Chief Justice to come and actually share on how they were able to implement theirs so that Namibia can avoid those mistakes that perhaps could come along with it and also know the benefits of it and now be well also triggered and exposed to the benefits of it and therefore put it into effect and put it into work. So yeah, it's something that really is, I guess, you know, timely at this, or should I say, perhaps overdue, because I mean, we are moving towards digitalization and everything is going to be towards that. And we wouldn't want anything to be lacking behind. You yourself, you wouldn't want to be having a smartphone that is able to do that, but then the system itself is not yet upgraded. But anyway, this is On the Radar Analysis. Please do come through your opinions and contributions right here on 0832888401. Come and ask your questions or share with me your insights on the matter. That being said, let's pause right here and make room for a scheduled commercial break, but we'll soon be back with yet more. Stay tuned.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Warm up with Red Hot Deals at WB. Get 750 gram CNB mayo for only $37.99 with SmartBuy. 2 times 1.5 kg real good mixed chicken for $139.99 with SmartBuy. 5 kg Palana elbows or mac for just $122.99. And 2.2 kg surf hand wash powder for only $49.99. See all our July month end specials at www.vurmanbrock.com. We care.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva Tero ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukurile. Oshafafana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuwana. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune uto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi tayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijabo ili nawa. Ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onore tatu imwe bali hea di nola natu heali bali no heali ileko berewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu matatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have a capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. You are tuned into On the Radar Analysis right here on Eagle FM. Now, as Namibia moves towards food security or makes its ways towards food security, medium-scale farmers at the Secondo Green Scheme are urging the government to implement strong policies that compel public institutions to produce food directly from, not to produce, sorry, but to procure food directly from local producers. Now, this demand was voiced during a visit by the Prime Minister Elia Ngurairi and Agriculture Minister Inge Zamwani Kamwe to the Secondo Green Scheme on Monday. According to the farmer, Patterson Benjani, government institutions such as the Namibia Defence Force, NDF, schools and hospitals should be mandated to purchase produce from local seams. He says, we are producing, but we have no guaranteed buyers. We are asking the government to ensure that institutions buy from us so we can sustain operations and repay loans. If he said, now farmers at Secondo say they are struggling to settle debts of up to $800,000 due to limited market access and inconsistent sales. They believe a local procurement policy would provide a lifeline, boost food security and stimulate rural economies. We are not asking for handouts. We want fair access to local market, said Albert Mutesi, another farmer. If hostels, schools and hospitals buy our produce, we can grow more, employ more people and feed the nation, he said. Mutesi also called for input subsidies, improved market access and better infrastructure to support farming activities. He lamented that the rising cost of production, saying they expect spend about $468,000 this planting season on seeds, fertilizers and chemicals alone. And I quote, we're not making any profit at all. There's literally nothing coming in. It's very stressful and unsustainable, adding that electricity costs and the rising input prices have reduced their yields. Mutesi explained, and that they need to harvest 160 to 170 tons from 20 hectares, which is now significantly less. Now, Secondo Farm Manager Maxwell Ngidinwa also criticized the fragmented approach by state-owned enterprises, SOEs, in procurement. He says SOEs are operating in silos. They are ignoring green schemes that are producing vegetables. 2 years ago, the Ministry of Education engaged us to align a hostel procurement with our produce, but nothing has materialized. He said, now Ngidinwa stressed that the government must lead by example. He says the government must buy from its own initiatives first. Only then can they talk about broader markets, Ngidinwa highlighted. Let's now take a listen to Maxwell, who is a medium-scale farmer.
There are some of us that owes commercial. We have accumulated debts to an amount of 700,000-800,000. So we are unable to, you know, to settle because we are not making any profit out of it. Yeah, profit is number one. And then food production, of course. We're supposed to produce food so that the country at the end of the day is food self-sufficient. But that will not be easily be realized because of the costs. I received my quotation today for our next planting. It's standing at $468,000. That is seeds, chemicals, and fertilizers. Those three. It's here on my phone.
So it gives you stress.
Yes.
You get angry at students.
Yeah, before we had electricity.
Yeah. Now, after that, there is electricity, there is water.
No, there's electricity.
Yeah, there is electricity. Water. Yeah, okay, okay.
Yeah, then that's a benefit.
They don't pay water.
Yeah, even if we don't pay water.
It's water in form of electricity.
Yes. Because even they understand properly. Because it's like it's add up for the month and then divide it equally. You would not know how much the years. Yes, many of us.
No, I beg to differ. A machine to basically measure accurately the electricity that they are using. Mm. Because the electricity they are paying for is basically for the pump station and the booster pump that pump the water to come to them. Because this electricity for the center private is connected to their houses, it's prepaid.
Okay.
But what we are charging them, which is fair, is to share the cost of the booster pump and the pump station, which is the biggest user of electricity. Mm. So now what we are doing, we have forwarded that to our engineer, that problem. So even now they can agree that they haven't gotten any invoices for electricity, maybe since January, because we are trying to say, how can we find a very equitable way so that it's transparent and they can also agree that this is what I utilize.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. So it's a technical thing which is also beyond us, because we are not electricians. We are not electrical engineers. So we invited our electrical engineers from the ministry and they are looking at that problem.
Yeah, in conclusion, I think I've said what I wanted to say. It's just the cost. The cost is unbearable. Yeah, so we are unable to get profit from it. Unable at all. There's literally nothing. So the request, like I said, if there is a way, because if these pivots are utilized 100%, it means what we are producing that side plus what is being produced here at the commercial is going to be more. Yeah, it's going to be more. And then that will show that there will be more food in the country. Even the millers will have more maize to supply to Prime Minister's office for relief. Yeah, drought. Yeah, I think that is what I want to do.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for the
welcome time. To farming business.
Thank you.
It's never profit.
Okay, thank you for back days when we used to be like getting all the inputs here. We used not to have stress, so it boosts our production. Normally, with our 20 hectares, we normally used to be like an average 160, 170 tons. But now the yield is down because of inputs problem. So if the government, through your office, can help to be like what we used to do back days, it's going to boost us. And okay, conclusively again, we normally used to face challenge of marketing. Sometimes we used to produce a lot, but comes to market is nothing. So we used to make loss through market process. So because of because we have scarcity of processed compounds also to take things also. So my suggestion, through your office is, if we can say government compounds or institutes, if they are being forced to buy things from produce from green schemes, it also can help. Mm-hmm. Like we have schools, we have any NDF, Namibia Defence Force, or hospitals, hostels, and so on, just to name a few. So I think it's going to help.
So is that not what happens?
No. Right, Honourable. What is happening is the SOEs, they are operating in silos. Some of these tenders are done knowing that they are green schemes. Mm-hmm. Knowing that you have green scheme producing vegetables. We had a workshop with the Ministry of Education for hostels. They came to us and they wanted to understand what we produce so that they can be aware, so that they can do their procurement to align with us. That was 2 years ago. Until now, we have not heard anything. So it's really a valid point, because government should buy its own government produce. It has to start there first, before we can also say, now take it to other markets. Yeah. I'll give you a practical example. I think 5 years ago or 4 years ago, we had that 100 cattle fell down at this farm that is operated by NIDA.
Market
is just quiet.
It's a story of tenders.
Yeah.
Because those who get tenders, they don't get the condition where they should source.
Yes, that is important.
Yeah.
And then in terms of input, what they are saying is very important. Because of the war in Ukraine and Russia, inputs went up significantly. And in most countries, when such economical changes or dynamic happen, there should be a policy intervention, because this is food security, given that we're importing 70%. It's a double-edged sword to our end consumers. So we are importing fertilizers from South Africa, which is usually by road, it's not by ship, even though we have rail until Grootfontein, and we have trucks. If we can utilize our railway system, we have our trucks just pick it up from Grootfontein, the costs are reduced significantly. Secondly, we source the inputs from South Africa, and then when we sell, we are still again competing with South African produce, which is cheaper. So the loser is our end consumers. So products are always expensive.
So you see, this is now economic.
There are some of us that owes commercial.
Government must buy from its own initiatives first. Only then can we talk about broader markets, Ngidinwa highlighted. Let's now take a listen to yet another medium-scale farmer on their concerns towards this.
Yeah, I will use an example of this current harvest. We put in roughly 480,000, and last week we concluded with harvesting. We came out with 115 tons. So at the current price of maize, that will be roughly plus minus 700,000. So if you take 500,000, you have got 200,000 remaining. That should include the cost of fuel, because we are paying for fuel, and we are paying for services of plowing. Anything that happens, you have to pay for it. So when you sell, extract what you have spent, at the end of the day, there's nothing. There's zero. There's nothing. So for us, it's not a walk in the park. It's not easy. There are loans that need to be serviced. Agribank, for example, you go and borrow so that you buy seeds, input, and everything. Now, when you calculate at the end of the day, there is nothing. It's like one is wasting time. Yeah, it's like one is wasting time. Now, the question that we would like to put across is that if there is any chance of government coming on board to assist medium-scale farmers, yeah, for example, let's say if the commercial side can then help the medium-scale farmers, let's say supplying services so that we can concentrate on the input. Yeah, services, I'm referring to the plowing services, planting services, harvesting, water, electricity, diesel, because we are paying for all that.
Maybe if you can help, man.
Okay.
Well, maybe she knows better.
Yeah, I will use an example.
Now, marketing remains a key challenge. Farmers say even after a successful harvest, they often struggle to find buyers. Namibia currently imports about 70% of its food and fertilizers, mainly from South Africa, with high transportation costs inflating prices. Now, in response, Agriculture Minister Zamani Kamwe acknowledged the farmers' concerns and reaffirmed the government's commitment to supporting local producers. Prime Minister Eliang Gurayre emphasized the need for a collaborative approach between farmers, traditional authorities, and policymakers in order to strengthen agricultural development in the region. Now, this renewed call adds momentum to national conversations around food security, rural development, and economic empowerment through local procurement. Now, you're tuned into On the Radar Analysis. Our studio number is 083-288-401. You may now come through and air opinions and contributions right here on the Radar Analysis. With that being said, I pause right here for a commercial break as I wait for your call.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Lipurane ngeno wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukurile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe kike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi to danjuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu kwa ndadwe nawa. Nune uteo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi kayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nukumuna oijamoili nawa. Ninge fata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ileko berewa vera hetatu natu bali o hetatu atatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye. Welcome back. And now this is the point where we take you to what's making headlines today in terms of economic indicators. Now we're starting off with Namibian dollar compared to other currencies. Now today, one US dollar will get you 17 Namibian dollars and 90 cents, while 1 euro will get you 20 Namibian dollars and 75 cents. £1 sterling today will get you 23 Namibian dollars and 98 cents, while 1 Japanese yen will get you 0.12 Namibian dollars. 1 Chinese yuan equals to 2 Namibian dollars and 49 cents. 1 Australian dollar will get you 11 Namibian dollars and 11 Namibian dollars and 56 cents. 1 Swiss franc will get you 22 Namibian dollars and 25 cents. South Africa building planes rebounded in May. The value of building planes approved in South Africa rose by 13.2% year on year to 9,210 million ZAR in May 2025, ending a 3-year downturn. Increases were seen in permits for additions and alterations at 52.1% versus 2.6% in April, and residential buildings at 3.4% versus minus 19.6%. And we now have a caller on the radar analysis. Good afternoon.
Hello, good afternoon. How are you?
Well, thank you, sir. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm sorry for my echo of my network. It's not well coverage.
It's okay. We can hear you clearly.
Okay. Well, man, I want to watch you. Can I have my own special contribution?
Okay.
Okay. You see, in our country, there's something which is not going well. When it's come to the end of the corruptions, and which has been revealed now, mm-hmm. and on the table of all people in Namibia, like this fuel lot, which was released, and there's a lot of which is not revealed, mm-hmm. many.
Yeah.
Because we know in the defense ministry as well, and parastatals, individual. You see what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
You see, I could understanding more special for the people who has been participate toward our freedom for independence of these countries. You see, there was sometimes kind of the project was intended, which was called DBC. And the DBC, that was being the people to be at least trained to make them a cooperative in the different of field, like horticulture, constructions, weldings, and you see, that kind of.
Yeah.
And now you see this, it was then how many decades passed, and this corrupt corporations project was totally unfounded, nicely proper administration, and they led to the corruption. That was my time of the teenager while I've been analyzing this.
Mm-hmm.
So then, after now, we're having this scandal of fish road, fuel road, and undetected corruptions within the government and so on.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let me tell you, now we're having some of the prosthetics. Let's come up in simple. Currently, you can see it. There is a National Youth Service. People have been taken to the charcoal productions and so on. I want to ask you, are there salary investigation that this corporate and this presenter, are they sure that they are really going to have a proper progress and successful regard of this charcoal production toward youth unemployment, alleviating poverty and other things? Really, let me tell you, this is a sort of kind of like, if there's no proper management, not an individually audited finding and the plan and program of the, then it will be also milestone, which is unfounded and which is not contributing towards the vision so-called 2030 Harambe prosperity and so on. Really, you see, we don't want to something which is devoted on and just for the declaration. And end of the day, they said, I know we're giving a training and so whatsoever. Okay, you should give a training. Did you give on after the, all the completions, are the people going to be giving the tools and everything to make sure that this dream should never becoming liars or being coming on the in the mud, which cannot be gold-plated to generate and contributing to the towards the economy of this country.
Yeah.
You see, really, we need something that to be in salary and to be visited all corner of any national project should be at least salary for individual non-government organizations to be involved, to finding from 1 month, 3 months, 6 months, 1 year, what's the progress?
We don't want
accountability,
transparency, and transparency. Mm-hmm.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. You see, let me tell you. You see, if you can see it now, there's some of the points, you know, where the children's of also the liberation struggle with engaging on these programs. Really, the person of the age of 50, the age of 45, are you sure that it's a, is it any meaning of the future and progress toward this? Let me tell you, where the youth is age of 18 to 35. And the, beyond the 40, that's something else. And something which is been, supposed to be taken in another platform. You see, you know, when Namibia get independence as well, you know that it was the United Nations failed to maintaining and settle programs of the people who were repatriated. Let's go to the other backgrounds of other countries. You find Zimbabwe was being independent and people were integrated and was being proper in accordance with that. You find even UNITA, Civil War of Angola. The UNITA bandits, there was also the well compensated by the nation, well settled, you see. And this, you know, you see, you could find if the children which are gathering there make demonstrations. Mm-hmm. And there's nobody watching. This is that's painful for our background.
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of like a hopeless and useless meaning. Nonsense. So something which could be, I take on that direction. Let's solve the issue of all this kind of nature.
Mm-hmm.
Not to be misusing the national funds to build unnecessary things which cannot have future generation and future progress in whatever. And end of the day, to become a milestone, something which unsolved, misused, cases, unsolved cases in this country. Mm-hmm. We seek and test out of those three kind of natures.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate one of your pointers that you make right there. I think one of the questions that would actually come to mind is to see, are these companies not audited? If they were audited, how were they not able to pick it up? Or is it that the auditors themselves were sleeping on duty? Or is it that what exactly transpired? Because at the end of the day, if there is accountability and transparencies, even if one is in the position where they can be able to actually take what doesn't belong to them, it'll be very difficult for them, because at the end of the day, they do know that 3 months from now, 6 months from now, there's going to be an audit, and therefore I'll be caught out. So these are things that I really do appreciate that particular pointer that you're making out there, because at the end of the day, if such measures are in place, there wouldn't be such stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. 100%.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we talking about corruption, it's not only that of embezzlement of funds.
Yes.
Or mismanagement, accountability, that mismanagement, mm-hmm. bad administration of any kind of institution, whether it's ministerially, whether it's prestatal, or whether it's individually.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's be talking about that. We're having a Minister of Labor here in Namibia.
Yeah.
And you could find it while going in the regions and regions. The way the people, they are working in how the environment is. We're talking about the labor law, what's the requirement, people who was working without the proper adequate of equipment.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about PPE. Let's go coming on individual company like in Swakop.
Mm-hmm.
You're finding a constructed and a construction company in Swakop mode, employing people, doesn't have any helmet, it doesn't have a safe food, it doesn't have any goggles and so kind of features. And you see, those kind of things. And well, now we're talking about the corruption, we're talking only in the government,
mm-hmm.
also in the individually,
mm-hmm.
in the home state as well.
Mm-hmm.
You see,
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of violations. We need to restore some order.
Mm-hmm.
We need to restore the order in accordance with the principal constitution of this country.
Mm-hmm.
Because let me tell you, if I am from the grassroots level, I did some mistakes of what kind of nature. You see, I'll be locked up. You see, you know how these people now, which is really involved in the big, this scheme of corruption, of a lot of money? It's a lot of money involved. And
exactly.
After a while, you know, because of the advantage of them to be in the lawyers and other things.
Mm-hmm.
And if something else.
Mm, and if you actually see and compare, South Africa has a whistleblower protection. I don't know if it's actually been put in place for Namibia as whistleblower protection by the ACC that's handling corruption cases. But then should a Namibian individual be able to see that something is actually off in a particular company? Are they able to stand up and actually report this case? Perhaps even maybe, let's say for instance, the case that is currently running, perhaps they noticed this about 3 years ago or 2 years ago, you know?
Yeah.
Are they able to stand up confidently and say, I'm going to approach this so without fearing for their lives? That's another pointer that we can actually ask.
Yes, you know, that we need the lawmaker people at least to have a protection of an individual wants to reveal
mm-hmm.
certain kind of the corruption.
Yeah.
So that a person should be protected fully, and
mm-hmm.
After all. Because, you know, you reveal something of those people, you put your life in danger.
Exactly.
Whenever I'm talking like this, I talk to the truth. Why the people, they want also to play gambling, political, in whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
Let's tell them about whatever. People, they were fighting for this country. We don't know, the children which are gathered in some ways there and there and there, they doesn't have their father and mother. And the economy of the country to be in danger of whatever.
Mm-hmm.
100 million, that one. If you can share to what all those people and to require putting whatever, wherever we're going to be using his money by or its own, wherever, you see, employ the children and employ people.
Mm-hmm.
And at least an academy, our country need to be at least protected by the in the national security.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about the intelligence of the country. Recruiting those people, they are having capable to run and to be, to go to protecting country, bordering. We're talking about the territory, we're talking about the sky, we're talking about the border and so on. We need also to root out this kind of drug dealers coming in Namibia and so on, making the brain of our children to become confused with this kind of nature.
Yeah.
And you see, we have potential to do that. And I very much confident the people of most special from the age of 35 to 50. Those people are the people whom they doesn't have kind of like that, you know, self-enrichment because they're about to go. They will plowing up to the extent. Mm-hmm. You see, we have a lot of people who have been caught in the other ministerial, in the process. Mm-hmm. After whatever 5 years, I go out, I go to second for the green pasture, whatever we need, we want the Namibia to having the career of the protection, sovereignty and the territorial integrity of this country.
Absolutely.
You see, yes, like you see those people, the children of reparation struggle, how they are gambling politically and whatsoever. And no one can be solving this issue. Mm-hmm. And many people, they are very sick and tired about this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. We're talking only the marginalizing of all the reparation struggle. We're talking also the marginalizing community of the Bushmen, of Akahona and whatever. And now people, they see they come into the children of revelation, they want to take it in the political saga. No!
Yeah, and then you also look at South Africa in terms of South African President Cyril Ramaphosa putting the police minister on forced leave or absent leave, something of that nature, instead of actually holding him accountable and actually passing down something towards him in terms of him interfering within his ministry or within his workplace. There is a habit of those who are actually in power being untouchable. But then those ones actually on ground, if they by any chance do any mismanagement, then they are dealt with efficiently and on a timely manner. Such things are also some of the things that we need to address. But I do appreciate you coming through and airing your opinion in this regard.
Yes. Okay, simplify. I have some poem here and I will simplify it into conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
You see, these things of like, you know, I was been appointed, for example, I've been appointed. Mm-hmm. After a while, I've been demoted to another extent.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, afterwards, I know I rejecting that an appointment. I don't want to go on that appointment. I show that I'm being demoted.
Yeah.
And then later on, I came in. You see, while I've been ongoing in the street, I'm suffering in the street. Later on, you find that, yes, I come back and I'm doing another activity.
Yes.
You see, those kind of things, those are really total to the corruption.
That's exactly what.
If I go in the retirement,
yeah.
I go in retirement without, you see, unless I'm becoming only advisor in the system, advisor in another platform of, you see, that's understandable.
Yeah.
But if I come up with full remuneration of whatsoever to the other position, that's whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You see, you know that sometimes if a person will be expelled, you are terminated in the account of unfit or whatsoever, like in the police or whatever in the MTF or collection service.
Mm-hmm.
One, sometimes you go forever. You will never be reappointed again. But the politician on that matter, because of what? Because of favoritism, you see that, no, Saki, for instance, she was having this position now. Ah, he's suffering, man. Let me give him to becoming in the nature conservation.
Mm-hmm.
Or let me be whatever. No, if I'm go.
And I think that habit is what actually fuels corruption. Because the next person is saying, this was done, whosoever has actually cases pending against them, and they still get appointed on a high position. So it makes them reluctant to say, even if I do something wrong, well, my chances of me actually being elevated because I'm already in a position of power are very high. But yes, thank you so much for making time. Who am I speaking to and where are you calling from, Sam?
Yes, you're talking to Comrade Saki. Comrade Saki is the one speaking. I'm calling. Actually, I was from Rongo region, Kalendle, I'm from Jujupa region.
Okay.
So really, we want the nation to be vigilant and to at least speak it up about something which will bring our country back. We want forward. Mm-hmm. We want people to go forward. Really, there's something which I come up with another statement in a later stage. I will be contributing, and I'm going to reading to other comments for other people.
Okay.
Thank you very much. My English like that, me. I'm not very much a good way. I'm wrong. I just give you the.
It was very clear. Thank you so much.
You must give him the map. You give him the map and to reaching your destination. That's
it,
good.
It was very clear. Thank you so much, sir.
Pressure.
Okay. Bye. Okay. And now this is On The Radar Analysis. Feel free to come through and air opinions and contributions right here on The Radar Analysis. Now let's continue with what's making headlines in regards to economic indicators. Now today, agricultural commodities, the top commodity gainer is coffee at 3.07%, then followed by sugar at 1.05% and rubber at 0.72%. Now the biggest losers in this category is cocoa at -3.01% and oat at -0.86%. In regards to metal commodities, the top commodity loser for today is platinum at -0.70% and gold at -0.58%. In regards to energy commodities, natural gas EU Dutch is the top commodity gainer for today at 0.84%. Natural gas follows at 0.83% and natural gas UK GBP at 0.74%. Now the biggest loser in this category is Brent crude oil at -0.19% and crude oil WTI at -0.06%. Now the British pound traded about $1,339 on 8-week low, mainly due to renewed strength in the US dollar. Now the dollar rose to a 3-week high after President Trump said he had no plans to fire Fed Chair Jerome Powell, despite criticizing the Fed for being too slow to cut interest rates. Now in the UK, investors are weighing recent jobs and inflation data for clues on monetary policy. The labor market continues to soften, with payroll employment falling again. Now, though revised tax data suggests the decline is less severe than previously thought, unemployment rose to 4.7%, while wage growth, though still historically strong, showed signs of slowing down. Now, meanwhile, inflation surprised to the upside in June, coming in at 3.6%, versus a 3.4% forecast. Now, the mixed signals create uncertainty to the Bank of England. Slower wage growth supports potential rate cuts, but sticky inflation could delay them. Now, traders have slightly scaled back expectations, but still price into cuts in expectations. Traders have slightly scaled back expectations, but still price into cuts in 2025. Now let's pause here and take a trip to the marketplace. When we do return, we shall be bringing you what's making headlines within our near borders of Namibia and also far borders of Namibia. Stay tuned. 083-288-401 is the number in studio. You can still come through and air your opinions right here on The Radar Analysis.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva Tero ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite okoye ekukurile oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarude kayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijabo ili nawa Ninge kwa tafanona, Monica ko Eagle FM, onora etatuimwe bali heali, nola natu, heali bali no heali. Ile ko derewa, vera hetatu natu, bali o hetatu atatu, o mafilane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually... To put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. And now this is the point where we take you to news beyond the borders. And of course, we start off regionally, then we move over to continental news. And thereafter, you can expect international news right here on the radar analysis. Now, starting off in South Africa, where the MK party has threatened to take action if the president doesn't resign.
MK saying in its statement that last year's election results amount to a decisive electoral verdict against Cyril Ramaphosa. But I mean, that's a bit of a stretch, isn't it?
I do think that it is quite a stretch, given that 9 years of his presidency is often referred to as 9 wasted years. I think for someone who spent a substantive number of years being part of the African National Congress and also witnessing the deterioration of governance in terms of all aspects, be it health, be it security, be it service delivery, etc., in the country, even during his time, I think that we saw a decline. And I think that all of that was a combination of what we saw last year. So I think it was more 30 years of non-service delivery, 30 years of poor governance that resulted in them losing the ultimate control of the country and then reverting to only having the small percentage of votes that they have, as opposed to just one person's presidency.
As you're talking, we're watching footage of KZN Police Commissioner Nhlanhla Mkhwanazi. MK, of course, seemingly very upset with the way that the president's handled this over the past 10 days or so. What do you make of the way that the president's handled these allegations and the days and weeks that have followed?
I think that one of the things that sparked people's, I would say, disapproval was the fact that instead of making some decisive decision, Ramaphosa just kicked the ball down the can by obviously establishing another commission of inquiry. I think that South Africa has had quite a number of commissions of inquiry, and these tend to cost millions of rand of taxpayers' money, which we don't necessarily have. One of the key things that should have been is to actually have the security apparatus investigate what is actually happening so that we could have a more speedily and also more decisive action taken with regards to all of this. I think that people are quite unhappy. I don't think that he is doing enough. And in fact, if it was the case that the security apparatus is as unsafe as is suggested, then definitely it is something that needs more urgent attention. And establishing a commission and having all of these inquiries, etc., having more discussions about it is not going to resolve this ongoing challenge, but it also gives people.
Now, still in South Africa, we talk about the disconnect drive.
To all Eagle FM listeners, do you want to stand a chance to win a voucher of $500 Namibian weekly? Answer this easy question. Please tell us, what are the three colors of the USAVE logo? Please SMS your answer to 081-200-4144 and tune in every Friday between 1:45 and 2:00 to find out if you are the lucky winner. The winner will be announced every Friday live on air between 1:45 and 2:00. Participate weekly to improve your chance. We'll save at USAVE.
The city of Johannesburg in South Africa says it's aiming to recoup more than 64 billion rand owed to the municipality by business and residents.
City officials pounced on unsuspecting tenants staying at properties that are in trouble over non-payment for services. The arrival of these officials meant one thing for those residing here. They will have to do without water and electricity. The disconnection drive is expected to continue until the end of the year.
We are targeting 1 billion in this kind of 1,062 properties that we've mentioned earlier on in the morning. But this drive will continue all the way until December. Yeah. If you observe on the news, our guys at City Power, every SDC, 70% of City Power, in Jobegota, they have a plan every week to disconnect property that are owing. We are continuing. There are others we've done, I think, in Rambeck, in Alexander, in just a couple of days ago. Many of them in the inner sea. So this is just an accelerated program, just to assist them to beef up whatever they are doing as an SDC.
The city of Johannesburg is urging customers who are in areas to come forward to negotiate payment plans.
Our biggest message, guys, is that come to us, engage us in terms of amount of money you owe and how do you actually want the city to assist you to pay the services. But then again, the other important matter that we must highlight is that some of the difficulties of people failing to come forward is that some of them are not even owners of properties themselves. Hence, you see that once you disconnect a property, you'll be told that let's go and engage an owner somewhere. Then the person just disappears.
The city has also admitted that some of its employees are allegedly colluding with defaulters.
What we normally see is that we've got teams that go out and do cut-offs on the defaulting customers. And on a number of occasions, we find that the following day, the cut-off has been reinstated. And we did arrest a number of people, including our own contractors, specifically in the Tefontein area and including the inner city. And those particular people are facing the charges as per the Criminal Matters Amendment Act, which constitute tampering with essential infrastructure. So we do see those kind of occurrences, which are of a criminal nature.
The disconnection drive excludes hospitals. Calvin Lula, SAPC News, Johannesburg.
Okay, let's now move on to Zambia, where Trade and Development Bank defends Zambia loan restructuring.
Many African countries are heavily indebted, leading to defaults, most recently Zambia and Ethiopia. These defaults affect the bottom line of development banks such as yours. How exposed is the bank, and what are you going to do about it?
We were very conscientious and responsible. As an African multilateral, we agreed long before the other creditors gave debt restructuring to Zambia. We were the first to do it. But what we did is we restructured short-term debt, which was debt arising from letters of credit. And so we restructured. And those letters of credit, you know, normally get paid within 180 days or some cases it's shorter, some cases it can go up to 360 days to 70 days. But these are normally, for very good reasons, kept out of debt restructuring because countries have to continue doing basic financial operations even during a restructuring process. And so they asked us, could you please reschedule the trade finance credits, the letters of credit that were issued to import essential commodities? And as a responsible lender, as a conscientious multilateral that is specialized in trade finance, we always understood that trade is subject to cash flows, right? So you import on the back of inflow sometimes. You have to export to import, or you need to have remittances, or you have to have an ability to do that. Sometimes your inward cash flows get delayed. It could be due to one or many shocks. And you tend to reschedule because you match your payment schedules with the inflows that they have.
Now, there have been calls by many African leaders, most recently including Kenyan President William Ruto, to have the international financial system overhauled to give reprieve to debt-distressed countries. How would an overhaul system look like? And do you see this offering salvation to the countries under stress?
Well, I think if you look at the situation of a lot of African sovereigns who are in difficult circumstances, they're squeezed right now. There's a funding squeeze. There's multiple things happening. And you know, in the world of finance, you can look at it as a liquidity problem or a solvency problem. If it's a solvency problem, it's a deeper problem, right? And it means you need structural solutions that are very significant. If it's a liquidity problem, it's about enabling short-term funding to move, waiting for, the solvency type issues that are not yet there to be averted, right? And so there's a number of ways of looking at it. And I think a lot of African sovereigns have, you know, the liquidity issues, partly because they have invested heavily in infrastructure. Many of them came out of COVID, of course, and that also had its effects. And so I think this is a slightly different situation if you look at the economic history of the region. I would say, if you just take, you're asking me about this particular case of Kenya. If you look at the amount of assets that have been generated here through debt for the past 10 to 20 years, there's assets to show for all the borrowings, right? There's real assets. These are long-term assets. They're probably worth much more than they were when they were first put up. So these are assets on the balance sheet of countries, right? So that's why it's a liquidity issue. It's not that, you know, these countries are really in a deep, deep black hole. It's not that kind of situation. And I think this is where I think the voices that are really asking for more fair consideration is because, you know, these things don't come out very clearly, right? It's just it's a very blunt approach. Risk turns on or turns off. When it turns off, doesn't matter. You can be double B, you can be triple B sometimes. Cost of funding goes through the roof and many people get shut out of markets. So, yeah, the system, nobody said it was perfect. I'm not saying it should be perfect, but I'm just saying, you know, there's a lot of room for improvement, and I think there's a lot more fairness. I mean, I think one of the issues that really, really upsets Africans is the cost of financing, right?
Meanwhile, Egypt is reaping economic gains from full BRICS membership.
Egypt's membership in BRICS stands out as a positive move. India, a BRICS founding member, has recently strengthened direct economic ties with Egypt following its BRICS ascension.
Both countries have played a very important role, not only in their bilateral or regional trade, but now with the BRICS. That has reflected in the important figures of trade and investments, with $6.7 billion India is investing in Egypt, and the two countries has agreed to reach the amount of investment to $12 billion within 5 years. Definitely, Egypt is a geographical central passageway to Europe, where the Suez Canal is key to Indian export to Europe.
Meanwhile, Egypt has been able to bypass U.S. sanctions on Russia by striking even more deals with its fellow BRICS member, according to a prominent Egyptian grain importer.
We heavily depend on Russian wheat, and despite recent sanctions on Russia, our demand has actually increased. To counter the unfair U.S. sanctions on Russia, some trade is done through mediators. Also, sanctions have reduced the prices of Russian wheat because there's more supply. So we contracted huge shipments of wheat at low prices.
He also commended BRICS policies to reduce dependence on the U.S. dollar in trade.
We have tested a period with limited amounts of shipments paid in Russian rubles. But now we are negotiating to make all our trade transactions in Russian rubles and Egyptian pounds. This is the same with other BRICS nations. It will decrease the prices of goods, lower pressure on hard currency, and reduce dependence on the U.S.
As for tourism, a main source of hard currency, Russian tourists remain top travelers to Egypt, even amid the sanctions. But Chinese visitors have also been pouring in larger numbers, and bazaars like this one are benefiting.
The Chinese and Russians like to shop here, and they are doing so much more than Europeans and Arabs these days.
Egypt sought membership to the BRICS bloc for years, and now as a full member, experts say it is starting to reap the rewards. Yes, Hakim for CGTN, Cairo.
Meanwhile, the UK lifts its 5-year ban on Pakistan Airlines.
Britain has lifted a 5-year ban on Pakistani airlines, allowing them to apply to resume flights to the UK. The British High Commission said on Wednesday that the ban was lifted after safety improvements by Pakistani authorities.
The decision comes just months after the European Union took similar steps in November last year. The ban was imposed in 2020 after a flight from the national carrier, Pakistan International Airlines, crashed in Karachi, killing 97 people. There was also concerns over pilot licenses issued in Pakistan. The restrictions had a major financial impact, with the airline estimating yearly losses of around $144 million. It is now struggling under debt to the tune of $2.5 billion piled up over a decade. PIA has been the only Pakistani airline to operate long-haul flights to Britain and the EU, while private carriers mostly serve domestic and regional routes. Its profitable UK routes, including London, Manchester, and Birmingham, could resume along its valuable slots in London's Heathrow Airport. The airline spokesperson said it aims to resume UK flights in the shortest possible time and has submitted its proposed schedule. Earlier this month, Pakistan approved four parties to bid for a majority stake in PIA. Pakistani defense minister said resuming all routes would boost PIA's value before privatization. A sale of the airline is seen as a test of Pakistan's ability to let go of loss-making state companies and meet conditions of a $7 billion IMF bailout.
And now with that, we have now come to the official conclusion after this episode of On the Radar News Bulletin. To stay tuned for the Voters Education Program or Preparation Program with Bishop Lucas Katinde, and also the Home Run Show with Dwight and Helmut will keep you company from 16:30. Make sure you don't miss it. From Indafa Happy Juju, it is goodbye and have yourself a wonderful day.
Lipura nenge no wapumbwa eva tere uliko ni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko dite opoye ekukurile oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana konongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijabo ili nawa Ninge fada fanona, Monica ko Eagle FM, onora etatuimwe bali heari, nola natu, heari bali no heari. Ileko derewa, mura etatu natu, bali o etatu matatu, o mafelane, Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima. Don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.